Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Joanne, are you there? Joanne. Let's see, we're having trouble getting Joanne on the line here. Let's see. Tonight, on the Pause Radio Show, we got Dawn Moore, the daughter of Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger. And we have Dina Martin, a daughter of Dean Martin. Now, let's see. I'm going to have to hang up on Joanne. She's going to have to call back, and we'll see if we can get it through. But I know all you guys have watched the Lone Ranger show, and it's on MeTV right now, and we're able to watch all those old classics. And tonight we're going to talk to Dina Martin about the controversy of that song her dad did, Baby It's Cold Outside. I don't know about you guys, but I think the political correctness is just about killing everything, music, TV, comedy, comics, everything. But let's see, do we have Joanne on the line?
Yes, sir. What happened?
Oh, I don't know. You didn't connect for some reason.
I don't know. So. Well, Dina and I are here. But before we start the show,
this is everybody.
Good. Before we start the show, I just need to make a few announcements, if you don't mind. First of all, welcome everybody joining us here on Employees Applause Radio Show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you listen to us, and our guests are amazing. We love having them on. And now we have some amazing, as well, sponsors. So joining the family, of course, is our KWV Wines from South Africa, Catskill Provisions, and now the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey. Let me tell you, the food is delicious. I went there. I have to sample everything. I'm sorry. But the food was delicious. Atmosphere was great. And they're located at 142 Outwater Lane in Garfield, New Jersey, for those of you in the North Jersey area. And really rush out there and get yourself something to eat. They had this filet mignon shrimp taco. It was the best taco I've ever had. Anyway, welcome to the show, Dina Martin. Not only is she Dean Martin's daughter, but she is a star in her own right. And Dina, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I am good. I'm a little tired. It's been a crazy year. It's been a crazy really busy, you know, doing lots of shows, doing lots
good.
Of TV and traveling around and packing, unpacking. So,
busy is good.
Yeah, busy is very good.
Yes. Well, I apologize for my voice. I don't normally sound like this. I'm a little under the weather myself, so I need rest too. But it's not happening.
I understand. Have some hot. Okay, we'll get some hot tea, lemon, honey, and a little rum.
That's the rum. What I'm missing. That's what I'm missing. The rum.
That's what you're missing.
Well,
then what's in this drink?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, Dina, thank you again. And of course, we want to talk about your father and
about you, of course,
as well. Do you mind? What should we start with? I mean, your father was just fantastic. I mean, he was just like, he was the king of cool. He was it, you know? I mean, he was so handsome and he was just so smooth. And one thing that I was shocked about when I did a little research was, I was surprised. I mean, he always came across as the guy who played the drinker, But he really wasn't in real life. Is that true?
I mean, he'd have a cocktail. Sure,
well,
you know,
of course.
But that was his, you know, wine with dinner and, you know, a beer after you play golf or something. But you know, that was his gimmick. And it
right,
was cool and swinging and, you know, the one thing, I'm sorry he did smoke, you know, because that's a, that drove me nuts. But
yeah.
He was absolutely amazing. And he knew, in fact, I'm trying to remember, he was interviewed by, oh gosh, was it, I'm trying to think who it was. It wasn't Dinah Shore, but it was someone who asked him and said, Dean, you know, how come, you know, how can you get by and do all of this when you're always drunk? So it wasn't Dinah Shore. It was someone from England. And he said, how on earth do you think that I could do all this body of
right.
work, you know, and be drinking? You know, that's just absurd.
And his body of work is humongous. I mean, movies, singing, performing live. I mean, he was everywhere. Amazing. I mean, what a career. I mean, you know, I'm a little younger than some folks, but I love the I love the Dean Martin Show. It was one of my favorites. And actually, it came on the year I was born, so I saw it later. But I loved it. It was a great show. Fantastic. And you were also on that show, right?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I was on it many times, and it was quite a lot of fun. But just going down to NBC to watch him do the show was amazing. He would,
right.
you know, let me take you back a little bit. So in, I'm trying to think of the year. 1964, I think, is when it was on. But NBC had called him, and they wanted him to do a TV show. And in those days, you were either a TV personality or you were a movie star.
Right.
And he was, you know, he was a movie star, and he really didn't want to do a day, you know, a weekly television show. That
yeah.
was, not something that he wanted to do. So
right.
he told all of us, he got all of the kids together the night before he had the meeting, and he says, you know what, I'm going to ask them for a ridiculous amount of money. I'm going to tell them that I do not ever want to rehearse and that I only want to do it on Sunday after I play golf. He said, for sure, they're not going to go for that.
Yeah.
So he goes to the meeting. He tells them, you know, that. He comes back. He said, they said okay.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was in the Guinness Book of World Records for, you know,
wow.
the largest contract that was.
Wow.
And he did it, you know, 10 years and then all the roasts.
Yeah.
So he was phenomenal. But to go
well,
there and watch him,
yeah. right.
You know, was just,
amazing.
He was comfortable with everyone. He made everybody feel at ease. He,
right.
he could sing with Goldie Hawn or Ella Fitzgerald.
Right.
He was just amazing.
He was the king of cool, and I'm telling you, his effortless charisma and his self-assurance was just there. He didn't need to rehearse. I mean, he just had the whole package. He was just
He
everything.
Had it. He had
you know,
it.
You know, you either have it or you don't, and he had it. So let me ask you about the Rat Pack. Uncle Q or what?
Uncle Frank and Uncle Sammy, of course.
Oh, how cool
and,
is that, huh?
Yeah, they were wonderful to me, and I really, in fact, I wore Sammy Davis Jr.'s tuxedo and danced around the house. It fit me perfectly. But, you know,
it was a small guy. So.
You know what was funny? They were campaigning for JFK when they were when he was running for president, and they kind of changed their name to the Jack Pack, and they would do fundraisers.
Oh,
and
nice.
And the one day they were doing a fundraiser at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Beverly Hills. And their tuxedos were delivered to our house. Side of War made their tuxedos, and the guy came and dropped off the tuxedos, and I took them and put them in the powder room, hung them. There was a large one for my dad, medium-sized one for Uncle Frank, and this tiny, cute little one for Uncle Sammy. And I couldn't help myself, and I put it on, danced around the house singing Mr. Bojangles or something, you know.
Or Candyman or something.
Yeah, something.
Oh,
and it was just, you know, so, and I said to myself right then, wow. Wouldn't it be amazing to be on stage with Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, and Sammy Davis Jr.? And I tell you, people, you know, dream big because dreams come true.
Exactly.
And I was
yes,
able to perform
do.
With all of them.
Nice.
And, you know, so it was, I learned from the very best, Joanne.
Yes, you did. And now when you were on the Dean Martin Show, did they say who you were on the show or just in the credits? I don't recall. I'm sorry. I haven't seen the show in ages.
Oh, in fact, I have this great introduction, and I use it on all
oh,
of my
nice.
Shows.
Good.
I
good.
Open
good.
It where, you know, it's so you see Dad. Well, he was talking with Frank Sinatra, and then you see my dad, and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet my daughter, Dina. Then I walk out, and Frank says, oh, there's Dina. And so that's the opening. So I have that little clip that introduces me when I'm, you know, when I do my show.
Right. Now, what made you go to the United Kingdom for studying the arts instead of the United States?
Because it was the thing to do.
Okay.
Darlington College of Arts, and it was, you know, it was just, it was a whole school of, you know, and I thought, you know, the Beatles were big then.
Right.
I've got to go
to England, right?
Yeah, maybe we'll see them.
Right. Well, we could talk about everything about, I mean, we have so much to talk about. There's so much. Now, everybody knows, obviously, Dean and Jerry and Martin Lewis. Martin Lewis. Make sure I said that right.
Yeah, Martin Lewis, yeah.
And how was your relationship with Jerry's kids?
Great. Well, you know, of course, you know, we were, you know, our families were very close. But I did, Gary and I did a show in Las Vegas together. And it was called, I think it's either the name's the same or Chips Off the Old Block. And it was, let's see, who else was?
And I'd love to have Gary on the show. You know, we have a lot of musicians from yesterday on. So, you know, from
Diamond Ring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great. So,
yeah. So we did a show together, and we've been close for a very, very long time.
Nice. Nice. Very good. Very good. Now, you have, like I said, you're famous in your own right. I mean, singer, dancer, actor as well. Now, the music that you did, you actually had some pretty prominent people behind you putting together your projects. I mean, you had the Wrecking Crew. You worked with Glen Campbell. I mean,
the list
just goes on and on. So, I mean, you just had one amazing life. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes, I did. You know, I was very blessed. And it was just really a lot of hard work.
It is.
And that's, you know, it's really hard, and but it's because I love it. And,
right.
You know, and I worked hard to get to where I am.
Right.
So I started with, let me see, I was in country first, and then I went to rock and roll, and then I started with the big bands. And after my dad passed away on Christmas, I started listening more to his music.
Right.
And I said, you know what, I should be singing this music, the Great American Songbook.
Right.
And it's been, you know, it took off, and it's fantastic. So I enjoy that and I enjoy performing with any size band. You know, I could have my quintet or four horn or 13 horn symphonies. I do, you know, I do shows all over. And you know, my book, Memories Are Made of This, Dean Martin Through His Daughter's Eyes, we're making it into a movie, so that'll be exciting. And
when's that coming out? When's that expected?
Well, we're taking our time, I tell you, because we're so busy with recording and the shows and all of this that maybe some of your listeners could figure out who could play Dean Martin.
Oh, John, you want to play Dean Martin?
Oh, I don't
really
think I'm that good-looking enough.
You know, because he was gorgeous, and he had it, and he could sing, and he was funny.
Nobody could fill his shoes. No one.
No one that I've seen yet.
No. So. Well, since you touched on Christmas and music, let's jump into the major question that's been going on lately. Why are we touching classic songs that have nothing to do with nothing? What is up with that?
Because people are nuts. People have gone nuts.
Couldn't you fight this? Couldn't you fight this? Like, no, we're not changing the words, because they changed the words.
I know they did, and they made the lyrics, you know, worse. Yeah, I mean, not worse.
Stupid.
You know, first of all, the first ones weren't bad at all. It's sweet and flirtatious and cute.
No,
and
these are stupid.
You know, so, I mean, this is, this is absurd.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing, you know, John Legend could rewrite the words.
Right.
He shouldn't have, because it's just, you know, a disaster what he has done.
Right.
And, you know, and I think he's a good singer, and I think Kelly Clarkson is a, you know, a great singer. So, you know, that's fine. But I know that we have spoken to Frank Lesser's, you know, daughter. You know, she's not happy that he did that.
There's got to be a way to stop it.
Well, no, you can't. No, because you pay the rights to do a song. But this is not Baby, It's Cold Outside. This is a whole other thing. And John Legend should have just written another song.
Right.
This PC police, it's just, it's too much for me.
Well, you know,
I understand, you know. the Me Too movement and all of that, but we've become so insane with all of this that, you know, because, you know, when you think about Baby, It's Cold Outside, it's an evergreen song. It's, you know, it was, you know, it's from 60 years ago that Frank Lesser wrote in 1944. It won the Academy Award in 1949. You know, who has, why on earth would you change the lyrics to that beautiful, cute song?
You know what? You know what? I mean, I had a conversation with a guy at work today, Les, and we both had a very good point that, all right, if you're going to change the words to a simple, nice listening song, holiday, holiday song, change the words to rap.
Yeah.
But that's allowed. That's allowed. Talk about bitch, hoe, this, that, and the other thing. Change those words. Those are very offensive.
Oh, it's awful.
And baby, it's cold outside is offensive. Get the hell out of here. Come on. And even opera. Opera's very violent.
Yeah.
Nobody's even touching opera.
No. Well, because nobody even understands it.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I don't know how well this song is going to do with Kelly Clarkson and John Legend. I really don't.
I don't either. And, you know,
it's probably the same people who don't want to take Christ out of Christmas that are complaining.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah, but you know what? Yeah. The thing is, I don't really want to talk about it anymore because all of a sudden I'm thinking this is just a PR stunt.
For them.
To sell, you know, some of his records. And, you know, as I say, you know, he's a good entertainer. So is Kelly. And, you know, I'm just sorry that they
had to. I just wanted your opinion on it. That's all.
Yeah,
I
think it's
absurd.
Sure,
I'm happy. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. The world's gone nuts, Joanne.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Sure has. Well, if anybody would like to talk to Dina, please give us a call at 646-478-0999. We'd love to have you on. John, anybody waiting on in the wings there?
No, Joanne. I think on Wednesday night, a lot of people are just going to listen to it in the morning. I don't think they're listening to it live. You know, it's a podcasting.
Yeah, we have that happen a lot. Yeah.
Well, I can't answer the phone tomorrow. And is it Wednesday? I don't even know what day of the week it is, but it is Wednesday. And
middle of the week. I know. So, Dina, where can people see you now? Are you still on Sirius? Do you still have your own show?
No, I don't do that. It got to be too much, but, you know, I do, I will do the show. I do it every once in a while, and I'll do, you know, an hour or 2 hours, and it's fun for me to do. But when we were doing a weekly show, it was just too much, or a daily show. It got to be too much because I am traveling around so much and, you know, learning new songs and recording.
Right.
And at Christmas, well, let me see. December 8th, I'm doing my Christmas show in Las Vegas at the Smith Performing Arts Center, which will be excellent. And I've got TV shows and things that I've done. But what people should do is go to DinaMartin.com, D-E-A-N-A, Martin.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, visit my website and see what I have. And I think, you know, most of the dates that I'm performing are on there, not the corporate dates. Those I keep private because I made the mistake of doing that one time when I said, you know, I'll be at the such and such, you know, the Hilton Hotel, blah, blah. And it, all these people showed up and it was a private party. So we okay, I can't do that anymore.
Right.
So, and those are fun to do. The private parties are very nice to do because I don't have to do any PR for it. It's already built in, you know, so I show up, I sing.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, you look fantastic.
Thank you.
And where your other siblings, do they have the bug as much as you, or not really?
No, I'm carrying it on, and I think that's probably why I was named Dina Martin.
Yeah.
Dean with an A.
You were the chosen one.
I am. Isn't that great to know?
Yes.
So, and you know what? As I say, you know, my dad always made it look so easy, and here it is. You know, because he just had it, and he was. You know, and I'd like people to know that he was a down-to-earth and sweet and kind and funny. That's who he was.
It came across in everything he did. I felt it. Was he the creator of the roasts? Was that his idea to do the roast?
For his show, no, the roast started with the Friars Club, you know, when they would roast people.
Right.
And so then they started doing it because you couldn't put any of those on TV. You know, and I've roasted a few people myself, but they decided to put a little segment on the Dean Martin show, on the regular Dean Martin show, and it was so well received that they thought, you know, once all of, you know, it started getting different when the TV was, you know, changing and they weren't having all of the variety shows anymore, because that's a lot of work and a lot of money and getting all those dancers and singers.
But they were
those,
great. But they were great.
They were fantastic. How they put that together every week is beyond me. It was like a Broadway show every week. You know, the people would go down and rehearse every day, but Dad would come in on Sunday, go through the cue cards, sing the songs, you know, do a run through with the Les Brown Band of Renown. Then he'd go put on his tuxedo. He would, you know, do a run through, and it was brilliant what he did. No one else could ever do that.
No one will ever fill his shoes. Never.
Nope.
That's going to be a hard fill to get him to play his part in this movie.
Yes, that's true. And so, you know, and I've been talking with, you know, Joe Mantegna, and actually it's Joe Mantegna's birthday today. So happy birthday, Joe. We called and sang to him. You know, he wants to, when he read the book, he said, Dina, I want to do the movie. I said, you want to play Dean Martin? Because he had just played Dean Martin in the Rat Pack movie. And he said, no, I don't want to play him. I want to direct it and produce it and, you know, do all of this. And so, you know, he's a very good, dear friend. And so we've been working on it for a while, but we just want it to be right. There's no rush.
You know what? I could see a young George Clooney doing it.
Not now.
Maybe a younger George Clooney. Maybe in Dean's older years that you play.
That's good.
I don't know. But that's the only actor that comes to mind image-wise to me.
Yes.
That is still the part.
So we're still thinking maybe someone will come along. Maybe there's some, you know, fabulous person out there that we haven't seen yet. And I do not want an impersonator.
No.
I want someone, you know, someone who is true and real and who's a good actor.
Right.
Singer and entertainer.
Well, whoever it is, it's definitely going to be a major breakthrough for their career, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so there's a lot. And then in February, we're off to Australia. I'm going to, you know, do shows there, you know, lots of them, which is fun. I was there a few years ago. The Australian audiences are hot and wild, and they're fantastic. They just hoot and holler, and it's good.
Excellent.
So I'll be doing that, and we're getting that together. So I have a lot of things in the future.
Do you still fly?
We have, you know, we still have our plane. I'm still a pilot, of course.
Yeah.
But we've been so busy. It's tough when you're doing all these shows back to back. And, you know, after I do a show, it's late. You know, usually I don't eat before, and I wait until after, and then I'll have a glass of wine. And you can't fly a plane. It's, you know, 8 hours bottle to throttle. So it's easier to just get on a plane and go, and then I can have a cocktail on the plane.
Yeah.
But you know, so we still have, you know, our plane is called Volare, which means to fly in Italian.
Oh, never knew that.
Yeah, Volare, to fly.
I have to ask you one real quick. I didn't mean to jump to another subject, but why did your father reject the surgery to save his life?
I don't know that he did. Where did you read that?
I believe it or not, I read it online that they told him in September of 93 that he had throat cancer. Lung cancer. And he refused to do the surgery.
Well, that's news to me. But you know what? You read it online. Must be true.
Hello. Yeah. He was told he required surgery to prolong his life, but he rejected it.
Well, you know, he was, I don't know that that's true because he never told me that, you know, and visited him, and I made him pasta vajoule every week.
Pasta vajoule last summer.
That's right. You know, my grandmother taught me how to make it, and so I made it for him, and it was a good connection for us. But, you know, he shouldn't have smoked. I hope people understand that now that these kids are vaping and it's... You know, it's really bad for your lungs, and you know, so yeah, you know, for me, you know, it's all about health. Eat healthfully, eat healthy food, exercise, and you know, have a good attitude on life. And I know, for me, that's what happens. You know, for me, and I have a fabulous husband, and thank God he's my director and producer, and and he's the one who takes care of all of this. And we have, you know, great kids, grandkids, and so that's it's good. It's,
nice. Was that Rosario?
Rosario?
Yeah, is that your husband?
Rosario is my assistant.
I thought maybe that was your husband that I was speaking to.
Oh, no, that was Rosario. And
very nice, very nice.
Very nice, and she runs everything. But,
nice.
You know, my we're just a little dingy right now with all of the TV shows and radio shows. And,
well, that's good,
You know, so... And we haven't had dinner yet, so I'm going to have to, if you have a couple more questions, I can do that, because we're going to go upstairs and eat.
Oh, absolutely. John, you have any questions or anybody on the line for
Tina?
Well,
I have Dawn Moore on the line, and she just wants to say hi to Dina, if that's okay with you guys. I'll put it through.
Sure,
hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, she told me she was dying
okay.
to talk to you tonight.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Hey, Dawn, you're on the line. You're on.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, everyone. How fun is this?
Hi, Dawn. This is, what a nice thing to be able to speak to you, you know, because I've been a fan of your dad's for 100 years.
She said the same thing about you.
Well, almost, you know, you're not quite 100 years old. I don't think even half of that. But I will tell you, when I learned that you were going to be on, I thought, my God, my father was such an incredible fan, and both my parents were, of your father. And kid you not, I would come home from work, which was all about a year but before I moved out. But I'd come home from work, and your father would be on, and the house was filled with his beautiful voice, and I wanted to share that with you. Your father was a very big part of our lives.
Oh, well, you know, that's great to hear, because your father was a big part of our lives. You know, my dad loved Westerns. You know, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, that was it, and he would just put on anything. That, oh, my God, the Lone Ranger. This is unbelievable that we're talking.
So nice.
Because he loved horses, you know, my dad, and he loved Westerns and all those things that he did, and so he was a big fan. We're all big fans. So it's very nice to make your acquaintance, and hopefully we can just stay in touch so that would be just wonderful.
Well, I would love that, and I was thinking the same thing. So hopefully Joanne will connect us. But Dina, thank you so much. It was delightful to be able to share that with you and chat with you. So yes, absolutely. Happy holidays. As I say that, and I hate it feels weird to even say it, but right around the corner is Thanksgiving. So my guess is you're going to have a big family gathering.
It's just going to be fabulous, beautiful, and you have a very happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas. And Joanne, thank you for
I just want to say it's a pleasure for me that I could bring the two of you together to say hello, and just an absolute honor to have you both on the show. And I appreciate it so very much. And I'm sure you'll be playing the right version of Baby It's Cold Outside at your Christmas party. So.
Everybody will.
Exactly.
All right, you guys, I'm gonna
Dina Martin, thank you so much.
All right, I love you.
Yes, we love you.
Thank you, Dina. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. On the phone now, Dawn Moore, Clayton Moore's daughter, who is better known as the Lone Ranger. Dawn, how are you, hon?
I'm great. This is a very, very fun thing, and I'm just delighted you reached out. So, yeah, let's have some fun here.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding.
Well, I'm going to put a teaser out there, and we'll see what happens between now and the end of the half hour. But as you know, I threw the gauntlet down on my Facebook page.
I saw.
So let's not say what it is. Let's not say what I said. But we'll see if that happens between now and the end of the half hour. Anyway.
Cool. Well, I tell you, it must have been so cool to come home. I mean, same with Dina, and know that your father was this famous character that all kids loved everywhere. And here you were the main kid that he mainly took care of and looked after. But, I mean, he just lived up to his role beyond anything else, as far as I know, that he really relished the role and honored it and respected it. And, you know, he wasn't like these role models today where, you know, they look up to these sports fans and they wind up beating their wives later or whatever, you know. I mean, he was a true Lone Ranger. Agreed?
Well, absolutely. And the interesting thing, I think, is, well, you know, twofold. Your question I had, you know, at the beginning was, you know, what was it like coming home to him as, you know, the Lone Ranger and having everyone love him and have it be the father you come home to. And, you know, the reality is what everyone forgets is that unlike Gene Autry or Roy Rogers or even Dean Martin, you know, he had a costume on. He had a mask. And other than recognizing his voice, my father could go about his business in the world and not be recognized.
Right.
There was a very different personality and person at home who was fun-loving and a big kid and had a fantastic sense of humor and loved to play jokes and loved to have fun and kind of like a big playmate for me, really. And that was very opposite from the stoic, you know, Lone Ranger.
Right.
So that was very different in that sense. So I didn't come home to that character. I came home to you know, as my mother called him, Clay, of course. But to the other part of your question, you know, he said early on, I mean, there's a LA Times article that says, quotes him as saying, I would be honored to play this role the rest of my life. He understood at the beginning how important it was to these children who were looking up to him to give them guidance.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had tremendous respect for kids. He respected his audience, and I think that's a very different thing than a lot of other actors who play roles that are child-oriented or they're, you know, they're superheroes. Dad didn't talk down to kids. He adored them, and they, you know, they obviously adored him, but he really adored kids, genuine love for them.
Right. Now, I have so many questions. I don't know what you want to ask first.
Well, Dawn, were you ever on the set of The Lone Ranger with your dad?
Well, not on the set of The Lone Ranger. I wasn't born yet. The show went off the air in 1957. I was born in 58.
Oh, okay.
So that would indeed make me 100 years old if that were the case. But I did go with him on a couple of occasions to some personal appearances. And, you know, and it was funny because during personal appearances, I didn't recognize him as my father, even though we went to the event together. So I would really not be too interested in what he was doing, and I'd wander off and look at whatever else was happening, usually if it was some kind of a powwow or a Western show or whatever he was doing. I would kind of wander off. Mm. So that wasn't always that appealing to me. But I did also go with him to the set when he filmed the Aqua Velva commercial, because by then I was about 11 or 12. Mm. And that commercial this is an interesting thing, that commercial was directed by Hal Needham, you know, the famous stuntman who then directed all the Smokey and the Bandits with Burt Reynolds.
Hal
Needham directed Dad in that, but he also was the stuntman, so he showed the stuntman what needed to happen. He directed
Your father was a stuntman. He started in the industry as a stuntman somewhat, right?
He did. He did all of his own stunts at the beginning, for sure, because he was incredibly athletic.
Mm.
You know, he was a catcher in a flying trapeze act. He was in the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago as a catcher. He was 19 years old. And, you know, you have to be really strong to be the catcher.
He already had
all that physical ability. So, yes, he did do all of his own stunts at the beginning. But, of course, as he became more valuable, he wasn't allowed to do as many stunts toward the end of the show, and certainly not during the films.
Right. So now his real name was Jack Carlton Moore. I wonder why he didn't go with Carlton instead of Clayton Moore.
Too hard to pronounce.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
He was Jack Carlton for a while, and it was just it wasn't Hollywood enough, you know? Eddie Small, actually,
Clayton
at the time, his agent changed his name for him to Clayton Moore.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing how they do that, you know?
Well, at least they didn't make him change his nose or his hair color or some other thing.
Right, right. So do you still have any costumes or from the show, anything from the show?
You know, I've kept the things that were important to me that represented him as my father. And,
wow.
You know, the costumes for me, that wasn't him.
Right.
You know, when people ask me, you know, how could you have parted with some of those things? I said, well, because those things weren't my father. What I do have that I hold very dear is his fishing tackle.
Oh, nice.
You know, I have his toolbox. I have things that I saw him use with his own hands. He and I went fishing together. You know,
yeah.
I would help him polish his bowling, the gun rig. You know,
yeah.
Things that were part of our everyday lives and him interacting with me as a father, those things are
right.
more important to me. You
right.
know, and,
right.
and to be honest, those are more important to me, but the costume is more important to the fans. And there is
right.
a full costume in the Autry Museum, which, by the way,
mm-hmm.
I would like to point out, has been there since the museum opened. So it's been
wow.
on display for almost 35 years. And it
wow.
is finally coming down early next year. So if anyone is interested in seeing that, the Autry Museum's in Los Angeles and Griffith Park, you should
cool.
absolutely go see it. It's going to come down early next year for restoration.
Nice, nice. Did Silver ever come home or no? Did the horse, was the horse ever at your house or no? stayed at the studio? Was the horse always at the studio or...
I love the idea of that, actually,
yeah.
though. No, the horse, no. Silver was owned by a gentleman by the name of Wayne Burson. And
mm.
Wayne trained Silver. There were three Silvers, actually, over the years that,
oh.
of course, could do different things. The first one was
yeah.
actually called Liver Lips behind its back because it liked to roll the copper, the bed,
yeah, yeah.
and make noise, right? And so the cameraman
yeah.
hated that Silver.
Oh,
but,
God.
Yeah, it was making too much noise. But Silver didn't live with us, no. And, in fact, I have one picture of me sitting on Silver just bawling my eyes out. Couldn't wait to get off. They had no interest
really?
In Silver. Yeah, as a baby, you know. I got plopped
That's
up
funny.
There and posed for a picture, and I wasn't having it. I wasn't having anything of it, so...
Now, I was curious if the horse ever came home.
No, the horse didn't come home, but I will tell you that, you know, Dad worked directly with Wayne Burson and worked with Silver,
uh-huh.
so of course Silver would interact with him on screen. And, you know, the thing that so many people probably don't take into consideration, they worked really hard in those years.
Now,
you know, during the when the TV show was on the air, you know, it was the very first Western written specifically for the medium of television, right? So 1949, Hoppy was on, so was Gene Autry, but both of those shows were taken from bits and pieces from their serials, from the Republic serials, and from their B-movies, right? But The Lone Ranger was written specifically for television, and they had no budget. They did three episodes a week, and they were all filmed simultaneously. So Dad and Jay had to remember three different scripts all at the same time.
Wow. Well, speaking of Jay, what kind of a fixture was he in your household after the show? I mean, since you were older after the show went off, so was he a fixture around the house? Was Dad still close with him after the show, or...?
Dad had so much respect for Jay. I mean, Jay really, I think Jay walked the walk. You know, Dad walked the walk in that he embraced the character. Jay
right.
didn't need the character. Jay
right.
knew who he was, and he was
right.
an advocate for Native American actors at a
right.
time when that was just unheard of. He actually
right.
founded, right? He founded... the Indian Actors Workshop in 1970 or so, and was an advocate for ensuring that you know Native Americans were cast in Native American roles. And so, but you know, if you go back to 1949, it was unusual then to have an Indian cast as an Indian, right?
Right.
I mean, because
look at West Side Story. It was supposed to be all Puerto Rican, and they weren't. They were all had makeup on to look Puerto Rican.
The ever famous Egyptian, dark Egyptian, right? The pancake makeup, dark Egyptian, which made everybody look some other color than white.
Exactly.
So both, you know, Dad's relationship with Jay was extraordinary. Dad had tremendous respect for him. Jay carried himself with just such dignity, and he didn't suffer fools at all. By the way, you know, a really great story there's several great stories, but one that I really love. They were working very, very hard out in Chatsworth, where it's, you know, Southern California, where it's hot and dusty, and it's 110 degrees out and at any given time.
Nice.
And Dad's suit costume is wool. I don't know, you know, if everybody knows that. It was a very heavyweight wool, and Jay's costume was actual suede, so it was leather.
Right.
And they were getting dressed in a bus and in bathrooms and behind trees. And they had no facilities.
Wow.
Finally, Jay one day. yes and no, except for one thing. Jay, you know, don't forget, Jay was a star before he got this role. Jay had been on Key Largo with Humphrey Bogart and many other films.
Mm-hmm.
So one day Jay really had had enough, and he got on Scout and he rode off the set.
Uh-huh.
And he went up on the top of a hill, and he stayed there. And, of course, filming came to a screeching halt, and Dad was sent to go after him. So he went up and said, Jay, you know, God, this isn't right, and we really need to not be holding up the production. And Jay said, Clayton, if we don't stop the production, we are never going to be treated right. And so after some conversation, Dad stayed with him, and the two of them stayed there until it got dark. And held up production, and the very next day, there were two shiny new trailers for them to dress in.
Oh, go Jay. There you go. Cool.
That's right.
Very nice. Very nice. Wow. Amazing. It's just amazing. I didn't look Jay's information up. He's passed now, right?
Yes, 1980.
Yeah.
He did.
Oh, yep. 80. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, quite a while ago.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. But what an amazing time for TV, and a great role model as well, you know. And did he really want to be an actor? I know he started, was it real estate, and then started doing the stunts, and he was the trapeze and the circus, and a model as well. So, like, did he really want to be an actor, or was that one of the goals, or? You know.
Well, you know, I think when we're young, we do whatever we are good at, right? And he was just, let's face it, he was devastatingly good looking. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So he was really good looking. And he was very athletic and very strong and knew how to move because of his modeling. He was a John Robert Powers model in New York. And so was his brother. Actually, his older brother was also a model in New York. And
I didn't know that.
Literally, his brother came out to Los Angeles first, and he said, you know, it's pretty good out here. You should come on out. So in 1938, Dad came out on a train from Chicago. And literally, it's so kind of amazing, actually. I found letters that he had written to his cousin back and forth, back east, about his time here, and he was doing the exact same thing that every actor, every aspiring actor, actress, model, anybody who wants to be in the business does, and he writes about it in these letters. I'm going to a party tonight. So-and-so is going to be there, and such-and-such is going to be there, and I hope I can do myself some good. It literally says, I hope I can do myself some good. I'm going for business, of course, and it's, yeah, you know, 1938, he's 24 years old.
Right.
So, you know, this is no different, you know, networking, right? We got to get out there network.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Then what was kind of interesting is Dad somehow got hooked up with the Mexican Spitfire, Lupe Velez.
Uh-huh.
Right. So Lupe Velez, who by 1938, her career was on the skids, right? She was a pretty big movie star.
Yeah.
And she had been married to Johnny Weissmuller at one point.
Yep.
And after her divorce from Weissmuller, her career was not doing well. She's alone. So she approached Dad at a party, this, you know, tall, black hair, bright blue eyes, handsome guy. And she says, she approached him and said, you know, I need somebody who's to be on my arm so we can go out. I can go out at night and get photographed. And the two of them hooked up for a couple of years. There's all kinds of movie tone and movie screen articles about the two of them being together. And the funny thing is, Dad and Johnny Weissmuller were friends.
Right, right. I would think so.
From Dad's years in Chicago. Weissmuller was the towel boy at the athletic club. My father's family was actually very wealthy, and they belonged to, you know, the athletic club in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And Weissmuller was the towel boy, and he was, you know, as you also know, he's an Olympic gold medal winner.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that's where he was practicing, and he and Dad became buddies then.
Wow. Cool.
So it was kind of a funny thing. So
absolutely.
Later in the 60s, when I was, at that point, I'm four now, and we were living in Encino, Dad invited Johnny over to the house, and you know, he loved kids, and we were all in the pool, and Johnny wanted me to like him, and, you know, I'm a little girl, I'm 4 years old, and Johnny jumps in the pool, and he's, you know, this big Tarzan, right? He's this big strapping man. He jumps in the pool and half the water spills out, and he makes that walrus noise, you know, when you put your face in the water and you blow bubbles out and you make that.
Uh-huh.
Scared the living crap out of me.
Did he ever do the Tarzan call for you?
No, I didn't. No, because already I was so scared. I got out of screaming, and I ran in the house, and my mother comes charging out, Clay, what are you two doing to her?
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my God.
Poor Johnny's like, I just was trying to, you know, play and have a good time, and she got scared. So, yeah.
Oh, God, that's so funny. I've got like a...
Hey, Joanne?
Yeah.
Joanne, we have a caller for Dawn.
Excellent.
It's Troy, and he has a question and a comment. Troy,
Hi,
you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Troy, are you there?
Hi, Troy.
Okay, cool.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling, honey.
Hi, Joanne. Thank you.
Hi, thanks for
calling.
Hello,
Dawn.
Hi, Troy. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I had a comment and a question, and I wanted to say, as one of the first generations, I guess, that somewhat sarcastically people say we're raised by television, that I'm very glad for the example that your father and Jay set for us, both on screen and off.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think it was very important to him, but thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I did have a question for you. You know, your father was rarely photographed outside the mask, you know, and even around the house or riding and exercising sometimes in the mask. Did your father wear the mask in the shower?
You are the winner of today's Facebook challenge. Good job, Troy.
Yay. Ding, ding, ding. Hey, Troy.
Oh, my God. You know what?
So
I put that on. Okay, so the real answer to that
answer?
Question is no. But I do strangely get asked those kinds of things serious, legitimately, all the time. Did your father wear the mask at home? And I want to say to people,
hello?
Yeah,
yeah,
really.
Hello?
What? How would that really work exactly? But anyway, I don't say that. I'm just, you know, I'm just nice.
Yeah.
But I will. The reason, Troy, you are such a riot. I'm glad you said that. The reason I even thought of that particular one is because that was in the Aqua Velva commercial.
Oh, he wore it in the shower.
In the shower. It was so funny, and it was
now
just...
Now it all makes sense.
Right. There, so I had to wait for somebody to ask the question. But, they because, of course, right, they couldn't film the Lone Ranger without his mask. But on the other hand,
exactly,
they're trying to sell a product, right? And when do you use aftershave? When you get out of the shower.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, good job, Troy. Yes, and Troy, by the way, for everyone's edification, is probably one of the walking personifications of the Lone Ranger character, and probably one of the biggest fans out there for sure.
Oh, cool!
Very sweet, handsome guy, and so is your gal pal Dora, and the two of you are just incredible. And I really love and appreciate all your lovely comments and support always, and on Facebook and at shows and things. So Troy carries on the legacy himself single-handedly.
Nice.
So Troy, thank you. Thank you for reading my Facebook post and taking my challenge and calling in.
Well, let me ask both of you a question
now.
Since Troy is a big fan, well, one of the biggest, and you are his daughter, what did you guys think of the 81 release of The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp? I thought it sucked, personally, but...
Okay, well, wait a minute. The 81 release, which is different from the Johnny Depp release, so which one are you referring to?
I'm talking about the Johnny Depp release.
Troy, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say that if I view it simply as a modern Disney movie, you know, with the Lone Ranger as a character in it, I think it's fine, you know. But I don't think that it carries on the tradition of that character that we had seen from Don's father and his predecessor.
Not at all. They ruined the classics once again, you know.
I was very excited to know at the time that they were doing this because the combination of Johnny Depp and the potential that he was just off of Pirates of the Caribbean and Jerry Bruckheimer, and it was going to be a Disney
well, sure,
product. All the pieces were right. And, you know, all the pieces were in place, and I was asked at the time, you know, how did I feel about it then? And that was before it was released. And I said, you know, I would love for the character to go on. I'd love for the character to go forward.
Right.
Because the message
that
the Lone Ranger carries is so important.
Right. That was kind. Yeah.
And so that sadly didn't happen because of how the characters were handled. And, you know, not only did the character not go on, again, it was another bomb. So... Unfortunately,
and
it wasn't.
What was the other movie? I only know the one with Johnny Depp. What was the other one?
Well, no, the 1981 movie, which is what you were kind of morphing the two of them together, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, well, that's what I thought it was in the 80s, but no, it wouldn't be. It would be later.
Was the one that that caused the uproar with the owner of the Lone Ranger character just asked my father to stop appearing in costume.
I wanted to ask you about that, but go ahead.
That's the opening door to that moment in my father's career. In the late 70s, Jack Rather wanted to remake the movie with a younger Lone Ranger. And he asked Dad, or didn't ask Dad, he told Dad that he could no longer go on the road as the Lone Ranger, and
that must have killed your father. Had to. I mean, he emulated the character and he lived the creed of the Lone Ranger. It must have devastated him that he couldn't do that.
You know, it did, and I think though that the interesting thing is there it was kind of twofold in that yes, of course, it devastated him personally, but he also from two sides. So it upset him personally because he took the role to heart, but it also was his sole source of income.
Right.
So there's that. And then the second part is, you know, from Jack Rather's standpoint, he really kind of cut his nose off to spite his face. And what I mean by that is they already in the mid 1950s.
Right.
Replaced Dad with John Hart after the first couple of seasons of the show in 1952. Mm. And that immediately did not go well. So John Hart was there for maybe a season or maybe a little longer, not even. And immediately fans were writing in. They knew the difference. They could hear the voice, the way the character walked and talked and stood and everything. Fans knew the difference. Ratings went down. Clayton Moore was brought back. Ratings went back up. So already once we have an example of fans have taken Dad to heart, right? So Jack Rather clearly did not learn that lesson, and he thought he could replace Clayton Moore as the Lone Ranger with someone else.
Right.
And Dad was he had a really great idea. He said, I'm not a young man. I can't play the Lone Ranger as a young man, but you should let me hand the mask down to a younger man to carry on at the beginning of the film.
Great idea. Yep.
So obvious, right? Isn't that obvious?
Pass the torch. Yes, pass the torch to a younger guy.
Pass the torch.
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it was such a great idea, but not one that you know, Jack Rather wanted to entertain. And had they done that, it would have been a whole different movie. His fans would have been totally on board and clearly very realistic.
More
accepting. Let's...
Yeah, right, more accepting.
But they didn't. And... that really was a pivotal moment because that ban of Dad being able to go out as the character lasted for 5 years. And in that five-year period, he probably made more money than he did in his entire career up until then.
Right. Wow.
Because he was adored. People wanted to see him, whether he was in the mask or not. He found a pair of wraparound ski goggles that he replaced the mask with, and he changed the blue outfit to something in brown, and he changed it all just enough, and he went out and said, Clayton Moore, who portrayed the Lone Ranger, and they couldn't stop him from doing that. And honestly, that pivotal section of his life, and that lasted from... God, he was 65 years old at that point. So, right? Imagine being 65 and having the financial rug pulled out from under you, which happens to a lot of Americans. I mean, that's not an unusual thing.
Right.
But he fought back and he said, I'm not going to just take this lying down. I'm going to find a way to go out on the road and continue.
At the end of that five-year period,
the only reason it ended was Jack Rather died, and his wife, Benita Granville, who was an actress, and Benita actually was in several of the Lone Ranger episodes and the feature film. When Jack Rather died, Benita said, Clayton, we're dropping the lawsuit. She said, I don't want anything to do with this. You can go back on the road and do whatever you want.
Oh, thank God. And, you know, it's a shame.
Hey, Joanne?
Yes, John.
We have a person named Joe Little on the line, who's the director of the Lone Ranger Fan Club, International Fan Club. Joe, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
How are you doing, Dawn?
Hi, Joe. It's so lovely to speak with you after seeing your name online.
I'm the National State Director for the Fan Club, and I wanted to thank you very much for supporting the club and representing us so well. You do an awesome job, and this is just another example of how dedicated you are, and I just wanted to thank you personally for all you do for the organization.
And thank you for what you do as well.
No, that's a small part compared to what you do.
Well, that is so sweet, Joe. Thank you so much. You know, truly, I feel the way Joanne actually just said, which is without fans who are so dedicated, and you and so many, you know, Troy, who was so darling, who just called, and all of the fans that you gather up online, and how much work you do with newsletters that you all put out, and that you just keep not only Dad's memory alive, but you keep alive the spirit of the character and the spirit of the show. It is so needed today. I mean, my God, it is so needed.
I agree. Joe, where can people find out about the fan club, hon? Joe?
Well, it's easy to get to. It's just go to the LoneRangerFanClub.com.
Okay.
And that's it. And all the directions are there, how to join us and how to support us. And every Friday night, we have a watch party sponsored by the fan club, and we show all the Clayton Moore and John Hart videos
nice.
Of the Lone Ranger. So
that's really
it's,
nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And
yeah,
like you said, it
yeah.
keeps the message alive, and
right.
we really need that now.
We do, for sure. And yeah. and I was saying it right before you called, Joe, that, you know, it's unfortunately he's not with us now because he would be all over the place. People would be loving him to death right now.
Oh,
right now.
Oh,
there's,
yes.
there's such a resurgence of memorabilia and retro right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's what we grew up with, and nobody wants
right.
to let it go. And that's
yeah,
why we do
right.
this show here. That's why we do this show, because we want people to be remembered. And we call it Applause Radio Show, because everybody deserves applause for what they've
yeah.
done and
yeah.
should always be remembered for it. And
well,
that's
right
why we
minute,
do.
Joe is the one who deserves the applause for keeping the fan club going and being so active. And so, Joe, thank you. And I'm so delighted you called in.
Okay,
everybody
well,
deserves
you.
The applause.
Yeah.
Well, it's a joint effort, I'll tell you that. And we really appreciate you, Dawn, and continue all your good work. Your
thank
father's
you.
Memory deserves that.
Well, it's the perfect thing. Today is National Kindness Day. I don't know if
yes.
everybody
yes,
knows that.
Yes, I
but
do.
what better subject to be talking about than what the Lone Ranger was, you know, would teach and what Dad himself really embraced, which is kindness.
Right.
I mean, let's face it,
yes.
it's just treat people with respect.
Right,
everyone
true.
Deserves to have an opinion and have a voice. Mm-hmm. And one of the things my father would always say to me is, you know, I may disagree with you, but I will fight to the death your right to say whatever you're saying.
Right.
No.
And that's how I was raised. And I can
right.
disagree
right.
with people, and we absolutely should all disagree respectfully.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, the Lone Ranger taught that. I mean, the Lone Ranger taught about being equals and that there was not racism, that there should be, you know, partners, and that was the foundation of the relationship between Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Right.
There were several episodes
dedicated
to that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what we try to get across to all our members, you know, respect everybody and tolerate
yes.
and just be a nice person, that's all.
Joe,
that's
out of curiosity,
right.
Joe, are the members a wide range, a variety of ages, or mostly?
Oh,
folks,
yeah, yeah, we
age?
Have. We have some that are like 8, 9 years old, and we have others who
oh.
are umpteen, let's just say.
cool.
Yeah, they're
cool,
up there.
Cool.
And, but they're all dedicated members, and they all enjoy being part of this organization. And it's
what
national
I think
thing.
Is so interesting is I have seen members who are, to your point, the opposite of what we would think the demographic is, which is, let's face it, the 60-plus-year-old men, right?
Right.
We expect that. But what I've seen a lot on the Lone Ranger Facebook page and certainly the fan club is women, young women.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
And so to your point about having children, that which is incredible, too, because, you know, there's parents who are exposing their kids to the Lone Ranger
right.
show, but to have women in their 20s and 30s, I'm always kind of blown away to see. So that I'm thrilled, of course, but it's
oh,
always
yeah.
like, wow.
Yeah.
Joe, do you guys do a convention at all? Like get together once a year?
We had planned one,
so?
But we're so international now. It, you know, where do you hold it? In London or
yeah.
in New York or California?
My house. Come to my house. Oh, no, we'll go to Dawn's.
We'll go
yeah,
to Dawn's.
Please.
All right. We'll all meet at Dawn's.
Do
what
it at
time, Dawn?
Dawn? Yeah, when Dawn? Tell everybody where.
Yeah,
now.
That'll go over well with my neighborhood, I'm sure.
Yeah. But
thank you, Joanne.
Thank you, John, so much.
That's the way to do that.
Yeah, I had a call. Thank you so much for all you do
thank
for
you,
the fan club. All right,
no, thank
you, have a
you
good
for
night.
Everything you do, and thank you for calling, hon. Take care. Good luck with the fan club.
Okay. Oh, thank you very much.
Joanne.
Have a good night.
Good night. Yes,
we're coming to the end of the show, so if Dawn has any way that the people want to reach out to get, you know, reach her, you know, if she could tell us where they can go, that would be great.
Yeah,
you know,
I see
all the messages on the Facebook Lone Ranger fan page, and, you know, I chime in absolutely when someone's reaching out to me there, so that certainly is probably the best thing. I will also tell you that I'm going to be speaking with Leonard Maltin on November 23rd for anyone who's going to be in Los Angeles at the Autry Museum. They are screening at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They are screening The Lone Ranger and the Lost City of Gold, which is the feature film that was done in 1958. And Leonard and I are going to be doing a Q&A after the feature, so I would love to see fans at that. And then plus the museum is pretty spectacular, so that would be a fun afternoon.
Nice, very nice. Dawn, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You were wonderful, and please come back anytime you like. You and Dina, we thank you both. Dina Martin, Dawn Moore, thank you so much for joining Applause Radio Show. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm so happy to be a friend of yours, and thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Dawn.
Really have a lovely, lovely holiday. Thank you.
You too. Take care, hon. Thank you so much. Good luck to you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. All right, folks. There you go. Dina Martin and Dawn Moore. Doesn't get any better than that, kids. Anyway, before we go, be real quick. On Sunday, the 17th, we have Diane Renee. She was famous for her song Navy Blue. Navy Blue, if you remember that. And Mel Carter, who sang Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me. I can't sing that right now. I'm so sorry. So that's Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's going to be great. And then the 20th, we have Mr. Ron Dante from the Archies and the Cufflinks. You know what he's saying. Ah, sugar. I can't wait for that
sugar
show.
Sugar.
And yeah, and also Frank Ania, who is also involved in, he's got a hit song out for an animated series on, I believe it's Nickelodeon. Ah, shit. What's the name of it? He's going to kill me. It's one of those, can't think of the name of it. Frank, I'm sorry. I will get it right. I promise. But before we go, again, thank you, Dawn, Dina, for joining us. Thank you to KWB Wines, Catskill Provisions, The Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield. Make sure you get there before the calm, before the storm, before the swarm, because that place fills up because it's so popular. And that's located in Garfield, New Jersey, at 142 Atwater Lane. John, thank you, honey. It's a pleasure always. You're wonderful. I love you. Thank you. We love you all. Please join us on the 17th, Sunday at 7. For another great show. We can't wait to hear from you and have you listen in. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Take care. Bye-bye.